Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier. Dramatized by Katie Hymns. Earthquake.
Italians, it's all over. If any of you are living, stand up now and your lives will be spared.
Captain Corelli was lying underneath the dead weight of his dear friend and comrade, Carlo Guercio. So he did not see the two men stand up, but he did hear the renewed clatter of the automatic as the German sergeant cut them down. He also heard the single shots as the trembling hand of Lieutenant Gunther Weber ensured the quick dispatch of the men who were still dying. Next to his head, he saw Weber's jackboot. He saw Weber bend down and look directly into his eyes. He saw the wavering barrel of the Luger, and then he saw the gun withdrawn, unfired. Corelli tried to breathe more freely and realized he was having difficulty not merely because of Carlo's weight, but because the bullets that had passed through Carlo had also struck himself. It was not until the evening that Velisarios came across the dead Italian soldiers. He recognized the man who was as big as himself, who had once offered him a cigarette. With a mighty effort, he lifted Carlo from the ground, nearly toppled over with the strain, and then saw. It was the mad captain, who was staying at the doctor's house.
Cristemo. Aiutami.
Nobody knew how many Italians were massacred because the evidence was lost in flames. Down in the valleys, the Germans were burning the bodies of somewhere between 4,000 and 9,000 men. On that evening, when all the Greeks were hiding in their homes, Father Arsenios arrived alone with his little dog at the fire at Troianata. He walked amongst the frantic German silhouettes as if invisible. Fired by apocalyptic rage, Father Arsenios grasped his staff in both hands and set about the shoulders and heads of the German soldiers with determined blows.
For God's sake, get him off me!
It shall not be quenched, night or day!
Crazy bloody priest!
In that orange glow, Arsenios looked like some cadaverous bat.
From generation unto generation!
It ended only when one soldier was on the ground and in danger of a fractured skull. The priest died in a brilliant flash of white light that he took to be the revelation of the face of God.
Belisario, are you all right?
I ran because he is still alive.
Who is it?
Belisarios placed a man's body on the kitchen table. He was covered in blood.
Pelagia.
Antonio? Belisario, you have never done a greater thing. I'm going to get my father.
Next.
Stay with him.
Next.
It was the first time that a woman had ever entered the cafetería.
What are you doing here?
We have to go. Come on.
You can't just walk in, can you, dear?
You don't understand.
I know I brought you up to be independent, but you go too far.
We have to hurry.
Well, where are we going?
Come on, home.
I'm coming.
Doctor, what do you think?
It would be kinder to kill him.
Don't say that. We're going to save his life.
I don't know if we can.
We have to.
So water was set to boil, and the shreds of the captain's uniform were gently clipped away. Pelagia frantically tore in strips not only her own sheets, but those of her father.
Can I help you with that?
Yes, please.
Pelagia, fetch me a bottle of spirit.
I'll fetch every bottle in the house.
What am I supposed to do? I'm not a surgeon. I have no cap, no gloves. None of this penicillin I've heard about.
Just shut up and do it.
Yes, 6 bullets in his chest. One in the abdomen, one through the outer flesh of his right arm, and an ugly but insignificant crease across his cheek. But it is a miracle he was not more wounded.
And you would have killed him out of kindness.
Kalagia, it is not as bad as I feared, but it is still hopeless.
Babacar?
What?
She wants only good news.
Exactly.
There will be fragments of uniform in these holes. Pockets of air punched inward by bullets. There'll be splinters of rib that I won't be able to locate. Osteomyelitis could set in. There might already be hemothorax. That's the spreading of blood.
I know what hemothorax is.
All right, good.
Can we just get on with it?
I need a drink.
Babaka.
Just a mouthful. Belisario.
Oh, thank you.
Antonio, I'm going to operate on you, but I haven't got much morphia. Belisario, can you hold the captain's head?
Of course.
Pelagia.
Yes?
Can you give the captain a drink?
Yes.
What are you doing now?
Preparing a gram of morphine. Pelagia, do the wounds on his face and arm. Clean them up, cut away the shreds, disinfect them and sew them up. Oh, and we'll need more boiling water, lots of it, and wash your hands, especially under the nails.
Pelagia discovered in the next hour the exact enormity of what she had asked her father to do. Her hands trembled, and she could hardly bring herself to touch his wounds. She was horrified when she saw her father actually cutting wide holes around the bullet wounds.
Baba.
Yes.
What are you doing?
It's called debridement, and I don't like it either, but it works. So if you don't like it, don't watch. I'm taking away all the damaged flesh.
I think I'm going to be sick.
First, the abdomen. The bullet is not far beneath the surface. Here. How do you account for this?
Account for what?
This bullet.
What about it?
Well, see the flattened and distorted shape? How did that happen?
He was behind the big man. The one as big as me. The big man was holding him up like this. I think the big man was trying to save him.
His name was Carlo.
Carlo?
Antonio always said that Carlo was the bravest in the army.
Belisario, is the man's body still there? We would like to bury it and not see it burn.
It's after curfew, but I'll go if you want.
Thank you.
Belisarios buried Carlo Guecio's remains in the yard of the doctor's house under the olive tree. Struggling across the walls and fields, he had felt like Atlas burdened by the world. In the darkness, he bound up Carlo's shattered jaw with a strip of sheet. Just before dawn, the doctor and Pelagia came out to pay their respects.
Our friend here arrived as an enemy. But we found him more full of goodness than any other man we knew. We remember that his many decorations were for saving lives and not for destroying them. The cruel man, whose ways are cruel, lies cursed. But the spirit of Carlo Guercio shall live in the light as long as we have tongues to speak of him. He was one who could have said, I am a citizen not of Athens or of Rome, but of the world. He was a man of whom we could say, nothing can harm a good man, either in life or death.
A thought occurred to Belisarios, and in his pocket he took a crushed pack of cigarettes, removed one, straightened it out, and placed it in the dead man's lips.
I owed him one.
Pelagia combed the dead man's hair and kissed his forehead.
Goodbye, dear Carlo.
When the captain awoke, he could not move at all, and the pain was terrible. He felt as if he had been crushed by that medieval torture whereby weights were piled upon a door upon the body.
I can't breathe.
If you couldn't breathe, you couldn't speak. The air passes from the lungs through the voice box.
Porco Dio. The pain is unbearable.
Mm. Oh, by the way, I owe you an apology.
What for?
Well, I used some of your mandolin strings to link the bones. I believe you made the treble strings out of my surgical wire, and I was obliged to take it back. When the bones have re-knitted, there'll have to be an operation to remove them.
You must move me from the house, Dottore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to put you in
danger.
Don't worry. We plan to hide you. Under the kitchen floor, Captain.
In the cachette under the kitchen floor, the captain relapsed into a fever, and Pelagia stayed with him, sponging his brow to reduce his temperature and listening to the gabble of his nightmares.
El amor. El Antonio. I love you.
Sparkle, sparkle, sparkle.
I love you.
When the fever left, the patient opened his eyes with wonder, as though perceiving the fact of his existence for the first time.
Drink this.
What is it?
Goat's milk with brandy.
By the same evening, he was able to stand with the doctor's help. His legs were thin as sticks and trembling.
Do you want to see what you look like?
I don't know.
You have a very impressive scar on your face.
Va bene. Oh, Dio. I look like a Sicilian.
That night, he was fed his first solid meal, which was snails. After 3 weeks, Corelli could walk again. Then he went to stay at the abandoned shepherd's hut that he and Pelagia had called Casa Nostra. In the days to come, when it was dark enough, when it was safe enough, whenever he could manage it, Corelli would sneak back to the doctor's house to see Pelagia.
Your beard is scratchy.
Do you think it makes me look more Greek?
Yes.
Enough to convince a German.
Definitely.
And that's all that matters.
I will always hate the Germans.
Günther saved my life.
He slaughtered all your friends.
He had no choice.
There is always a choice.
He wasn't brave like Carlo. Carlo would have refused to shoot us, but Günther was a different kind of man.
Would you have refused?
I hope so. But I can't say.
If we have two sons, the second one should be Carlo.
Agreed.
Tell me that you love me.
I love you.
Kiss me.
Pelagia wished they could keep the captain on the island, but there were people who would betray them just for bread. It was only a matter of time before the Nazis discovered his presence. Furthermore, the weather was turning foul, and in the leaking Casa Nostra, the captain was cold and wet. She told Cocolius and Stamatis to look out for the madman who used to go around with Arsenios, and to ask him to call on her if he could. At 3 in the morning, Bunny Warren tapped softly on the window of her room.
Calimera, Kyria Pelagia. What ho?
Who is this?
Antonio, this is Banio. Banio, this is Antonio.
Ah, buonasera.
Antonio needs to get off the island. Can you help us?
Of course, absolutely. Easiest thing in the world. There's a boat leaving tomorrow night.
Where's it going?
Sicily.
This time, Corelli did not go back to Casa Nostra before dawn, but stayed with Pelagia by the doctor's consent. On this last day, the three of them sat together in the familiar kitchen.
No, I feel guilty about leaving alive when all my friends are dead.
Captain, when loved ones die, you have a duty to live on their behalf. For your boys, you should make music and enjoy yourself and do it for them. Besides, you might not survive the voyage to Sicily.
Baba, don't say that.
I shall miss you both very much.
You'll be back.
I owe my life to you.
Oh, I'm sorry about the scars. It was the best I could do.
I'm sorry about the island. I don't suppose we shall be forgiven.
Well, we forgave the British and the Venetians. We might not forgive the Germans, but most probably it will be easy to forgive you because all of you are dead.
Babaka, please stop talking about death.
Sorry?
As if we need reminding.
Captain, I must have forgiven you already, because how else could I give you permission to marry my daughter?
Davvero?
Papa.
But there is a condition.
What is it?
He must allow you to become a doctor.
Ah.
So, I'm going to leave you two children alone together. There is a little girl dying of tuberculosis I should visit. Nothing to be done for her, but I should go just the same.
I'm so afraid.
I think you won't come back. And that the war will go on forever.
I will come back.
Promise?
I promise.
I wish we had lain together as a man and a woman.
Everything at the right time, Coritzimo.
There may never be a time.
There will be. There will. You have my word.
At 11 o'clock, Lieutenant Bunny Warren returned.
Standard operational procedure. Dark clothing only. Don't want the blighters to see us. No conversazione, unless absolutely necessary. I've done a recce tonight, and Jerry's lying low. Doesn't like the cold. Warm clothing essential. Understood?
Understood.
Understood.
Doctor?
Understood.
The journey to the beach did not consist of any great adventure. There was a cold wind, no moon, a light rain, and the darkness was entire.
Please, don't die.
I'll try not to.
A light flashed three times from the sea, and Warren returned the signal.
Time to go, Captain.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
You're most welcome, sir.
Dottore, thank you for everything.
Go well, Antonio, and return.
I will. From your lips to God's ears.
Goodbye, Antonio.
After this, he plunged through the black waves and clambered aboard, vanishing into the darkness like a ghost. The German occupation lasted for 1 year, and there is little to say, except that it caused the islanders to love the Italians they had lost. Gone were the football matches and the Neapolitan songs and the sentimental arias, the charming chicken thieves and the wild individualists. The Germans came into any house and kicked over furniture, beat the occupants, and carried away anything of value. Both Pelagia and the doctor were beaten at different times for different reasons. The doctor had all his precious medical equipment smashed, and Pipsina was clubbed to death with a rifle.
Do you think it will ever end?
When the Germans retreated in November 1944, they destroyed every building for which they found time, and the Kefalonians rose spontaneously and fought them all the way to the sea. The night before he left, Gunther Weber brought his gramophone and his collection of Marlene Dietrich recordings and left them outside Pelagia's door. No sooner had the celebrations begun than the communist andartes emerged from hiding. They had long been armed by the British in the mistaken belief that these arms would be used to defeat the Nazis. So another reign of oppression began. The doctor was dragged away in the night by three armed men who had decided that since he was a doctor, he must be bourgeois. Pelagia was beaten unconscious, and when she woke up, she did not know what had happened to her father or where he had been taken. Penniless, helpless, and stricken by a dose of inconsolable despair, she ran to her friend, Ursula.
Corizzimo!
Oh, hell.
When Pelagia had limped bleeding through her door, Drusula took the girl into her arms. Within a week, Drusula had closed up the doors and shutters of her little house on the quay and moved into the doctor's house on the hill. But Drusula was out when Mandras made his return.
Mandra? Is it you?
Pelagia?
Yes.
But you're so skinny.
Yes.
And your hair is grey.
You look different too.
3 years of living in idleness upon the bounty of the British and the booty stolen from peasants had turned the handsome fisherman into a toad.
I thought you must be dead.
You were hoping, you mean?
Mandra!
Don't I get a kiss from my fiancée?
I'm glad you're alive.
How is your father?
I don't know. The communists took him away.
Then he must have done something to deserve it.
He did nothing. He healed the sick. That's all.
There would be reasons. The party is never wrong.
You're one of them.
Not just one of them. An important one of them. Soon I shall be a commissar. And we will have a nice big house to live in. When shall we get married?
We will not be married. We were very young and naive, and it was not what we thought it was.
Tell me, Pelagia, when exactly did you turn into such a faded slut?
What?
Your letters.
You still have them?
Yeah.
Why?
Read the last one.
Why?
Read it.
Agapeton, still no word from you, but Panais came back from the front with his hand missing, and he told me that it is too cold to hold a pen.
Do you think I'm stupid?
Sorry?
Slut? Huh? I said read the last one.
Agapeton, I miss you so much.
I shall read it.
Mandra, please. Huh?
You never write to me, and at first I was sad and worried. Now I realize that you cannot care, and this has caused me to lose my affection also. I want you to know that I have decided to release you from your promise. Yes, I can read. I can read, and this is what I found in the letters I have been carrying next to my heart. It's strange, but when you read this letter to me once, I seem to recall that it said something different.
I didn't want to hurt you. I'm sorry. But at least you know the truth now.
The truth is that you are a whore.
I want you to leave.
The truth is that you have an Italian fascist fiancé.
Please, leave.
Is this what I've been fighting for? Huh?
The violation of women was something that now came naturally to Mandras. It was some irresistible reflex acquired in the last 3 years. Pelagia fought. Her nails broke in his flesh. She flailed at him with her hands, knees and elbows. Mandras slapped her repeatedly about the face in an attempt to subdue her. When the derringer fell from her pocket, Mandras did not see it.
No! Oh, yeah.
Mandra, he tried to rape me.
What?
Mother.
Emu! Mandra!
She shot me!
I was defending myself!
My shoulder hurts!
Get out!
Mother, she was...
How dare you!
Let me explain!
How can you explain this?
The things got out of hand!
Fascist, Nazi rapist! Get out of here before I kill you!
Mandra stumbled out into the bleak December sun and looked at the olive tree. It was a tree incomplete. Without Pelagia, as she once was, fresh and beautiful, chopping onions beneath it and smiling through tears. A wave of grief and nostalgia overwhelmed him as he lurched away to the sea. The fisherman who recovered the bloated body reported that when he had found it, there had been 3 dolphins, taking it in turns to nudge it towards the shore. During the occupation of the island, there had been so many rapes and so many orphans that Pelagia and Drusula were not surprised to find an abandoned bundle on their doorstep.
What shall we do with her? Keep her.
She must belong to somebody.
Somebody who wanted her to be safe with us.
What shall we call her?
You choose.
I'd like it to be Antonia.
Antonia took her place in that providential matriarchy as though designed for it by fate. She may not have had a father, but she had a mother and a grandmother, and she was soon to have a grandfather as well.
Babaka?
When Dr. Yanis returned after 2 years, he was utterly broken by the continual daily brutality. He was forever speechless and emotionally paralyzed. But when he walked into the kitchen, the first thing he did was bend down and kiss the child Antonia on the head.
Babaka, I can't believe it.
He took up medicine again, but now the roles were reversed and he was the one helping his daughter. Then in 1950, a public health official banned them both from practicing because they were never officially qualified. It looked as if they were all to sink into abject poverty. But very fortunately, a Canadian poet arrived on the island looking for lodgings. Drusula showed him her house by the sea. It was damp and smelly, but the poet offered her a rent that was 9.5 times what she had thought to propose.
He must be mad.
Mad or very rich.
On this, we can eat lamb at least twice a week.
Oh, and beans that were dried this year rather than last.
And don't you think we can enjoy a bottle of wine now and again?
Oh, I think so.
In fact, between the three of them, they drank a bottle of wine almost daily, which had a wonderfully healing effect on the doctor's psychic wounds. At length, he smiled and laughed again, even if he never spoke.
Father, come and play! Come and play now!
During all this time, Pelagia became convinced that Antonio Corelli was dead. She also became convinced that ghosts really did exist. It happened for the first time in October 1946. Pelagia was standing outside the house with the infant Antonia cradled in her arms. Something made her look up, and she saw a figure dressed in black standing, looking at her. Thin and bearded though he was, she saw clearly the scar on his cheek and the same brown eyes. Excited beyond joy, she put the baby down to run to him.
Antonio!
But when she looked
Antonio!
Up, he had gone.
Antonio! Antonio! Antonio!
She stood watching
Antonio!
And calling
Antonio!
Until her throat hurt and tears
Antonio!
Blinded her eyes.
Antonio!
The following morning, she found a single red rose on the ground above where Carlo Greccio lay. The same ghost appeared at the same place in 1947, and every year, at roughly the same time thereafter.
I wonder where he died. I wonder if he died that night, in the sea, in the little boat, or if it was Italy, at Anzio, or somewhere on the Gothic line. I wish I could know.
Pelagiamo, what difference would it make?
I don't know. I can't explain.
The year 1953 brought fresh disaster to the island. It was a fine August day, but something felt wrong. There were no birds in the sky, and fish could be seen leaping out of the water as if they wished to escape the sea. Suddenly, Drusilla announced,
I am ill. I feel terrible. Something is happening to my heart.
Mama, I've got to get out of here!
Antonia ran outdoors, and the very next moment, the earth erupted with a stupefying roar. Dr. Yanis emerged from his room and spoke for the first time in years.
Get out! Get out! It's an earthquake! Save yourselves! Save yourselves!
When it was all over, there was very little left of the house. Walls were reduced to half their height, and what was left held nothing but rubble, and the body of the doctor, who had planned his dying words for years and left them all unsaid.
I should have tried to drag him out.
If you had, you would have died.
You don't know that.
You don't know that you would have lived.
It would have been better to die trying.
Would it have been better to leave Antonia without a mother?
I don't know. I don't know. I only know that I deserted my own father in his hour of greatest peril.
He was 70 and he owed God a debt.
Oh, don't be so ridiculous.
He saved our lives. It was a good death, Pelagia.
But Pelagia fell into a morass of self-recrimination and remorse. She neglected her appearance and her household tasks, preferring to sit by his grave, chewing her lips until they bled.
The trouble is that she lost someone she loved during the war, and this extra death has made it all boil over.
Is that the ghost?
Yes, that's the ghost.
I don't think I can take much more.
Me neither.
Drusilla and Antonia came up with a plan.
I had a very interesting dream last night.
Oh, really? Do tell me about it.
I dreamt that your grandpa told me that he wants your mama to write the history of Gefalonia that got buried in the earthquake. To get it done for him.
Did you hear that, Mama?
Pelagia went back to the cemetery and looked at the inscription. Beloved father and grandfather, faithful husband, friend of the poor, healer of all living things, infinitely learned and courageous. Then she went to Argostoli and bought paper and pens.
The half-forgotten island of Kefalonia rises improvidently and inadvisedly from the Ionian Sea. It is an island so immense in antiquity that the very rocks themselves exhale nostalgia.
Pelagia had read through the manuscript so many times that all the old phrases rolled easily into her head. Drosula and Antonia spied on her sitting at her table in a scholarly attitude. They crept away and danced.
We did it!
We did it!
We did it together!
After this time, Pelagia virtually became the doctor. Just as he had done throughout his life, she did virtually nothing about the house, leaving it all to the women. As she wrote, she discovered her own passions, and out onto the pages there soared thundering condemnations and acid verdicts to rival the doctor's own. The joy of it transformed her, and the project kept her busy up until 1961.
You have a postcard from Santa Fe.
Santa Fe?
Greetings from Santa Fe, it says.
You would like it here? All the houses are made of mud. There's no name. It's from no one.
It can't be from no one.
Soon there were others.
From Edinburgh. It says, the wind at the top of the castle knocks you off your feet.
They came from Rio de Janeiro, Cape Town, London, Moscow, Madrid, Calcutta. Always a short message, always no name. Pelagia wondered if they could be from her father's ghost. Her second thought was that they had come from Antonia.
You've got a secret boyfriend.
I'll be quiet,
you've got a secret
you.
Boyfriend.
By this time, Antonia was 17 and beautiful, and she had a not-so-secret boyfriend of her own, a 32-year-old radical lawyer called Alexei, who was short and clumsy, and not beautiful at all.
Alexei has asked me to marry him, and I said yes.
I thought you said you were never going to get married.
I changed my mind.
What if you change your mind about Alexei? And then it'll be too late and you'll spend your life full of regret, hmm?
Of course, Pelagia was thinking of her own mistaken engagement to Mandras. But the marriage went ahead anyway, and Pelagia rapidly grew to adore her new son-in-law.
If you have a boy, you must call him Yanis.
Okay.
In October 1993, a 14-year-old boy called Yanis was standing in the ruins of his grandmother's old house and concentrating very hard on practicing a decent tremolo on his mandolin.
Excuse me, young man.
Oh, you startle me.
The thing is that I couldn't help noticing that you're doing something wrong.
I've had trouble with this tremolo. It keeps breaking up.
It's your left hand. You're trying to use your first and second finger for everything. And that won't do.
Will you play me something?
If you like.
The old man took the mandolin and began to play the Siciliano from Hummel's Grand Sonata in G.
Madonna Maria! This mandolin is Antonia.
How did you know that?
Where did you find it? Who gave it to you? How do you know its name?
I dug it out of that hole in the ground with my friend Spiro and Velisarios, the strongest man in Greece, who's old now, but still strong.
Velisarios?
But it was Grandma who told us it was there and what it was called and everything.
And would your grandmother be Kyria Pelagia? Daughter of Dr. Yanis.
Yes, and I'm called Yanis after him.
The old man mopped his brow with a handkerchief. Yanis noticed a scar across his cheek.
When you found the mandolin, Did it have four strings missing?
Yes.
Do you know where they are?
No.
They're in here. Dr. Yanis mended my ribs with them, and I've never taken them out.
Who are you?
Tell me, young man, is your grandmother alive?
Yes.
What about your grandfather?
What's grandfather?
Kyria Pelagia's husband.
She hasn't got a husband.
You mean he's dead?
She never had a husband. I mean, not that I know of.
This mandolin used to be mine, but I've heard you play, and I'd like you to keep it.
Thank you.
I was going to marry your grandma once, you know.
Does that mean that you're the ghost?
Although he was in his 70s, Antonio Corelli rediscovered a certain amount of youthful agility when Pelagia began throwing kitchen equipment at his head.
All of my life mourning, all my life thinking you were dead, and you alive, and me a fool. How dare you!
I told you! I thought you were married.
Married? Married? No such luck, thanks to you.
I came back for you. In 1946, I came round the bend, and there you were with your little baby, and you looked so happy.
Couldn't you have asked? Couldn't you have said, excuse me, but is that your baby?
Please stop throwing things at me.
Did you think what it meant to me when I ran to you and you disappeared? Did you think about my heart?
I came back every year.
Oh, did you ever see a husband?
No.
Oh, you should have died and left me with my fantasies. How can you bear to look at me now?
What do you mean?
Oh, it's all right for you. Men don't degenerate as we do. I mean, you look the same, but old and thin. I look like someone else. I mean, no, I know it. I wanted you to remember me as I was.
You're forgetting that I came to spy on you. If you see things happen gradually, there's no shock. To me, you are just the same.
So, where have you been living all this time?
For the last 25 years, in Athens. Huh? Because I didn't want to be Italian. I'm a Greek citizen now.
A Greek citizen?
What are you laughing at?
Just the idea of it. You, as a Greek. Did you ever write those concertos?
Three. I've played them all over the world, too. The first one's dedicated to you, and the main theme is Pelagia's March. Do you remember it?
Yes, yes, of course I remember it.
Everything here has changed so much. It used to be so pretty. Now everything is concrete.
Ah, and we have electricity, and telephones, and buses, and running water and sewers, and refrigerators. And the houses are earthquake-proof now. Is that so bad?
It was a terrible earthquake.
Yes, it was.
When they asked for volunteers, I came straight away.
What?
And I had a terrible experience. I saw Carlo's grave open, his body, little scraps of uniform and the bones smashed.
Antonio, oh, how dreadful.
It was a sad day.
You never read Carlo's papers, did you?
No.
Come back to the house and eat something with us, and I'll give you his writing.
All right.
Corelli found it difficult to read Carlo's writing, and difficult to digest this new information.
Dio mio, Dio mio, and the boys used to make him go to a brothel. What torture. It's terrible.
Well, he wasn't just another war hero, was he?
He was more complicated.
He was.
I was thinking...
What?
I don't know what you'll make of this.
Well, go on.
I'd like to rebuild the old house.
What, my father's house?
I've retired and I want a nice place to live. A place with memories. Would you sell me the site?
You are completely mad.
But would you?
I don't even know if I own it.
So do I have your permission to try and rebuild the house?
No. I don't know, possibly.
I'm going to come and see you again tomorrow, and I'm going to bring you a present.
I don't want a present. Look, I'm too old for presents. Go to hell with your presents.
All right, not exactly a present. A debt.
You owe me a life.
What are you doing here with that?
I promised you a goat, remember? Oh. When yours was stolen.
At my age, the last thing I need is a goat.
I don't care if you want it. I promised it, and here it is. Sell it if you want, but if you saw how difficult it was to get in the taxi, you wouldn't be so hard on me.
Right, let me look at it.
What do you think?
Wait. Okay. Yeah. It's a very good goat. It's got ticks, but otherwise it's good. Thank you.
Do you think you'll get much milk from it?
You milk it if you like, Corelli. Personally, I only try to milk the females.
Oh, coglione!
The following day, the captain turned up outside the door on a motorcycle.
Now, you really have lost it.
We're going to see if Casa Nostra is still there. Just like in the old days.
What, do you really think I'm going to travel on a thing like that?
Why not?
But Casa Nostra could never have survived the earthquake.
I hired it specially. It's not as nice as the old one, but it goes very well.
Go back to Athens. You are a lunatic.
As they veered perilously along the stony roads, she clung to his waist, white-knuckled with terror. A venerable grey moped chugged and popped its way past them. It was adorned with not one, but three girls, all dressed in the briefest of white dresses. Corelli heard a melody in his head, something joyful that captured the spirit of Greece. In composing it, he would only have to think of driving along with Pelagia in search of Casa Nostra, and passing three young girls in the first flowering of beauty. The one driving the moped had her feet up on the fuel tank. The second was redoing her lipstick with the aid of a small pink mirror. The third was facing backwards, and she had a deeply serious expression on her face as she immersed herself in a newspaper and with elegant fingers tried to prevent the pages from flapping away in the breeze.
In Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier, dramatized by Katie Himes, Pelagia was played by Celia Mayras, the older Pelagia by Mia Soteriou, Captain Corelli by Daniel Philpott, and the older Corelli by Sean Baker. Dr. Yanis was played by Stephen Greif, Drasula by Anna Sava, Mandras by Chris Pavlo, and the narrator was Tom Goodman Hill. Velisarios was played by Alexi K. Campbell, Father Arsenios by Alex Zorbas, Bunny by Jonathan Keeble, Young Antonia by Anya Gordon, Antonia by Faye Castello, and Young Yanis by Thomas Brown Lowe. The Major was played by Simon Treves, and the Soldiers by Jot Davis and John Dougal. Original mandolin music was composed and played by Alison Stevens. The director was David Hunter.